Riverside County, California has a dubious distinction. Since the foreclosure crisis started, its rate of repossessed homes has been among the highest in the nation. And even after years of economic disaster, some residents are still waiting for the worst. NPR's Tamara Keith went to Moreno Valley in Riverside County to find the story of one neighborhood block.
Dana Lane doesn't look devastated. It's part of a subdivision built in the late 1980s, a mix of stucco and wood siding and mismatched fences. It looks like so many working-class suburban blocks, but there are small hints of what its residents have been through. A broken window, for sale signs, brown lawns. More than 2 years into the housing bust, 20% of the homes on Dana Lane have been foreclosed, and residents here wonder who will be next. Anita Sandoval stopped paying her mortgage 5 months ago.
There's nobody living next door. If you look here, this house across the street is empty. This house, they left.
And those who stayed, virtually all of them are underwater, meaning they owe more than their homes are worth. Sandoval and her landscaper husband bought their bright yellow two-bedroom home near the height of the market. She stands in her driveway looking at the house across the street that just sold in a foreclosure sale for $75,000.
And I bought mine for $260,000. And it's the exact same home. I've been in the house. It's the exact same home.
But that's not why Sandoval stopped making her mortgage payments. No, her savings ran out, and she was finally hit with the painful reality that she and her husband really couldn't afford this house. They never could. There are basically two kinds of homeowners on Dana Lane. Those who bought high, like the Sandovals, and those who had been there a while and saw their equity ballooning until it stopped.
Like everybody else, I'm in an upside down no.
Brenda Moore owes more than $300,000 on her mortgage, which is kind of remarkable given that she bought her house back in 1989 for $80,000. A search of public records reveals Moore has refinanced her home 8 times since 1998. The loans are from a who's who of subprime lenders. With each loan, she took out more equity. Each time, the loan terms got worse.
Hey, I had a lot of equity, so I was just, you know, going in, using it, and having a lot of things done, outside and inside.
Moore, a retired nurse, replaced a sagging fence, put in new carpet and a tile floor in the kitchen. But that doesn't explain where all the money went. Most of it didn't go to tangible things. It went to raising her 5 grandkids and 2 great-grandkids, even after she was no longer able to work. At one point, Moore had just pulled out a chunk of equity when a family member passed away. She used the money to help pay for the burial.
So that was a blessing. Since I had just, think about a week, I had just did the refi and was going to do some more work around the house. And that happened.
The bubble mindset here was infectious, but it didn't affect everyone. William and Laura Betts stand out on Dana Lane. They've actually paid off their mortgage. They made their last payment in 2005 at the height of the refinance frenzy. It was a goal from the moment they moved in back in 1986.
Payment was $750, I think. And the very first payment, we sent in $10 extra. And they sent it back because we had to pay at least a whole month's principal, and that was $15 or something. I forget the exact number, but it was more than we'd sent in.
Every month, they sent in a little extra. They're Mormon and say their faith guided them to be fiscally responsible. Sure, they got calls from mortgage brokers who were eager to help them turn their home into an ATM, but they resisted. They weren't even tempted.
I'd hear the commercials on the radio about, okay, this is the ultimate refinance. And then 3 months later, the same company and the same radio host says, this is the ultimate final refinance. And you know that things just can't keep going like they're going without something happening. You think, this is crazy. This is insane. These people, they're foolish.
You can see the consequences up and down Dana Lane. Brenda Moore says at her end of the block, there have been 5 foreclosures. The one across the street became a real problem.
It stayed vacant for so long, we had never had no graffiti. And then they started marking graffiti on that fence right there on this house right here on the corner right here.
But Dana Lane is too proud for graffiti. Moore says neighbors painted over it. A black wrought iron fence gives Moore's 2-story home the look of a fortress. But it could have just as easily wound up like the long-abandoned foreclosure across the street. When it got to the point that she could no longer make her mortgage payments, Moore thought about walking away. But she says the Lord intervened. A nonprofit group helped her get a loan modification. Her payments have been cut in half. I tell her about the Betts family down the street, and she seems a little surprised that there's anyone on the block who didn't refinance.
So that's good they didn't have to. But then, too, you know, I look at it this year. You're sitting on a bank. So if you can use it, use it. Because you can't take it with you. So enjoy it while you can.
At the other end of the block, Anita Sandoval isn't enjoying her situation. She's worried about how she and her husband can possibly hang on to their home.
All the money you put into it and all the months you paid for nothing.
She fears the day the sheriff comes knocking on their door. It happened to one of her neighbors a few months ago.
He was taken out of the house. It was devastating how he was taken out of the house for everybody to see that they had all his things at the curb.
At the peak of the market, homes on Dana Lane were going for 4 and 5 times what they can sell for now. When William Betts thinks about what's happened to this street, he doesn't resent his neighbor's choices or the nice furniture and granite countertops they bought with imagined equity. He just feels bad for them.
How do I say this? Most of our neighbors, I think, sold their inheritance for a bowl of pottage. The jet skis are gone, and so's their house.
Actually, there's one jet ski left on the block, parked in front of a house that's now about $100,000 underwater. Back in November, Betts lost his job. It's the second time in 4 years he and his wife have had to live off of savings and unemployment, but at least they don't have to worry about their home.
I just remember the day that we signed the papers that the house was now ours. Yeah, I've slept pretty good every night since then, because when you own your house, you never have to worry about where you're going to live.
Home prices in this neighborhood may have bottomed. Nobody knows. The Betts' home is now worth little more than it was when they bought it 25 years ago. Not much of a reward for doing everything right. But that's not how the Betts see it.
Be it ever so humble, it's ours.
Tamara Keith, NPR News.
From NPR News, this is All Things Considered. I'm Michelle Norris.
And I'm Melissa Block. 36,000. That's how many jobs the economy lost last month. Painful, yes, but still the number was better than economists had expected. And the Labor Department said the unemployment rate held steady at 9.7%. But for the long-term unemployed, better times still seem far away. Many don't even qualify for jobless benefits. And those who do often exhaust their government support before they can find a job. As NPR's Yuki Noguchi reports, this recession is testing the limits of the 75-year-old unemployment insurance system.
In late 2007, for the first time in her life, Kim Richardson found herself without work, without savings, and without income.
I have worked full-time even while I was going to college since the age of 16. I am now 43.
So the Missoula, Montana single mom expected to receive unemployment benefits when her business partnership went sour.
I felt, and I hate to say this, but I deserved it. I paid into that for years. And I felt like it's okay for this short time to be able to use this.
But Richardson was told she didn't qualify because of the way she and her partner incorporated their clothing business. She says she nearly lost her home, visited a food bank for the first time, and is now cleaning homes and living a pared-down life. A large percentage of today's workforce wouldn't qualify for benefits either. Temps, most part-time workers, and self-employed people can't collect on unemployment insurance, nor can those recently on maternity or other forms of leave. Those who choose to leave or were dismissed or fired from their jobs are also disqualified. Figures vary, but according to the National Employment Law Project, only 42% of the currently unemployed are eligible.
We like to think about unemployment insurance as some generous thing that we're doing to help the unemployed, but in fact, that is not why we created the system in the first place.
That's Howard Rosen. He's a fellow who studies labor at the Peterson Institute think tank. The intent, he says, was to keep money in people's pockets so they, in turn, could spend the money and keep the economy going, a temporary bridge to the next job. But the jobs picture today is different than it was in 1935. Even in good times, the economy destroys jobs almost as aggressively as it creates them. And that means job seekers need more training than ever to acquire new skills for new kinds of work. Rosen says the government should therefore provide more time and more money for retraining.
The current recession and the slow recovery in the labor market is actually pointing out some real serious weaknesses in our unemployment insurance system.
James Shirk is a senior analyst at the Heritage Foundation. He says the jobless benefit system isn't working, but says it's because it's too generous. With the maximum number of extensions, workers in some states can collect nearly 2 years of benefits, and that's not helpful, he says.
The jobs that have been lost are not coming back, and workers need to change to new industries, move to new sectors of the country. And having 2 years of UI benefits allows those who are unemployed to sort of to put off making those very difficult and very painful decisions, to keep imagining that the jobs that they used to have will come back.
Sam Littman says he realizes he'll have to move from his small town in Nevada and switch careers to find his next job. He was fired from a Walmart in Elko, Nevada, for alleged misuse of company time 2 years ago. He didn't qualify for jobless benefits, so he's relying on his wife's income and hoping to graduate from college in a year.
So I'm hoping I'll be okay by that time, especially for back in Vegas. It'll be much easier to get a job there than it would be up here.
Nevada's unemployment rate is 13%, but Littman says he's optimistic about his future odds. Yuki Noguchi, NPR News.
After a House vote yesterday, businesses are a step closer to getting a tax break for hiring unemployed workers. The measure still needs final approval in the Senate. If it passes, businesses that hire unemployed workers will be exempt from the 6.2% Social Security payroll tax through December. They'll also get a $1,000 credit for every new worker they keep on the job for a year. Many in Congress doubt the bill will do much to create jobs. One worry is that most of the money will go to businesses that would have been hiring anyway. We thought we'd reach out to a couple of small business owners to find out what they were thinking. And first, we're going to Andy Hahn. He's general manager of Fountain Hills Door and Supply in Fountain Hills, Arizona. That's just outside Phoenix. He sells and installs doors and windows. Mr. Hahn, welcome to the program.
Hello, Michelle.
I understand that you have 12 employees right now. If this bill passes, do you plan to hire any more?
No, we don't. At the current state, construction is at a standstill, and our business is closely related to the construction industry. We have to see growth in the industry before we add any more bodies into our system.
Help us understand just how hard the housing market has been hit there in Phoenix.
Specifically, I can tell you that our revenue numbers are roughly a third of where they were 2 years ago. Construction in the Phoenix area has virtually come to a standstill. The amount of inventory that is still on the market needs to be dissipated, and most of the banks and financial institutions are hesitant or just are not loaning any money to developers to start any new housing programs.
Is there anything the federal government could do that would convince you to hire new employees?
Yeah, the key thing that the federal government can do to convince us to hire is to get the construction industry going. In order for them to get the construction industry going, they have to really light the economy on fire, and they have to free up the financial institutions to be able to start loaning to people who want to start building houses.
Well, Mr. Hahn, all the best to you. Thank you very much for taking time to talk to us.
Certainly.
That's Andy Hahn. He's the general manager of Fountain Hills Door and Supply in Arizona. We go next to Simone Wilker in Paramus, New Jersey. She and her husband own Alpha Graphics, a printing and marketing shop. Ms. Wilker, you have 5 employees, is that correct?
That's absolutely correct.
Are you planning on making any new hires?
Well, I would love to be able to hire a new salesperson, because I think it would be great to increase our sales and our revenues. So that I definitely have in my mind.
I'll take that as a maybe.
I guess it depends on the financial ramifications of hiring someone new at this point in time.
Now, if you hired someone, you would potentially be exempt from the 6.2% Social Security payroll tax through the month of December. That make a difference at all to you?
Oh, yeah. That would be nice. I mean, every penny counts. That's the only way I can explain it. Every single penny counts. We're watching everything that we purchase, and we're watching our costs and paring everything down to the bone. And that's why I'm really considering hiring someone new, because if we could now increase our revenues and our sales, it would make a big difference to us.
Now, as you know, there's a debate here in Washington as to whether this bill would actually do enough to create jobs. You're the second small business owner we talked to. The first said he's not going to hire someone. You're saying, well, I might do it, but I'm not so sure. What would the government have to do to move you definitively and very quickly to, yes, I'm going to hire someone?
I guess it would be to increase the amount that they're willing to give you as an incentive. I mean, I would love to see $5,000 or $10,000. And I would say that having someone on the rolls as an unemployed individual is costing the government a bundle at this point in time. And so anything that could help them in hiring new people and getting them off the unemployment rolls would be an incentive for the government to offer me more money. So in my dreams, they'd be offering me $5,000 or $10,000 to hire someone. But I don't think that's realistic. So I would say that $1,000 plus not having to pay that Social Security tax for the month of December would certainly help. And if I'm already looking to hire somebody, that might be the turning point, whether I would hire them or not. And probably I would.
Well, good luck to you. Thank you very much for taking time to talk to us.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
That's Simone Wilker. She's the co-owner of Alpha Graphics in Paramus, New Jersey. Earlier, we heard from Andy Hahn of Fountain Hills Door and Supply in Arizona. We were talking to both of them about the tax break that businesses would receive for hiring unemployed workers should Congress pass President Obama's jobs bill.
This is Weekend Edition from NPR News. I'm Scott Simon. A better-than-expected jobs report released yesterday shows the unemployment rate held firm in February. It's an indication that the economy is close to the point where it will begin creating more jobs than it loses every month. NPR's Tamara Keith introduces us to some people who are dealing with long-term unemployment.
There are now more than 6.1 million people who have been out of work for 6 months or more. For Trenta Kennedy in Springfield, Illinois, it's been more than a year.
It's tough.
She's 41 years old and had been working at a construction firm.
They decided to close their office here in Illinois. Me, being the person that ran the office, obviously lost my job.
Kennedy is hoping to get a job in the criminal justice field. And when she's not sending out resumes, she's doing volunteer work. Kennedy says her life has changed dramatically.
I had to go and file for food stamps, which I've never done in my whole life. Just because I didn't want my son to go hungry.
She had a job interview this week and thinks it went well. Charles McKimmy is 39, and he's been out of work for 2 years, ever since getting laid off from his job as a contract worker at a Toyota assembly plant in Indiana.
You just feel like you need to work. You know, you feel like you need to be a provider, and that bothered me because even though I had unemployment coming in, when I got laid off, my income dropped by two-thirds.
McKimmy decided the best thing he could do was go back to college and pick up some new skills. He's learning how to repair the computer systems and robots found in modern auto factories.
It's just everything is going to that nowadays. And you just either got to learn it or be out in the cold, you know?
So what do people do when the job search drags on? Frank Zeleny got creative.
Basically, it's like, okay, I'm off of Wall Street, and it doesn't look like my specialty is going to be wanting me anytime soon. What do I do now?
2 years after getting laid off from well-paying Wall Street, he's substitute teaching, got a paying gig singing in a church choir, and is teaching voice lessons. He's also trying to get voiceover work.
I've stitched together a number of jobs, just knocking on all kinds of doors that I haven't thought about knocking on in a long time. But with the unemployment status, I suddenly had the time to try things again.
56-year-old Ralph Fuhr has been on the job market for 4 months. He spent the last 20 years as an IT manager and now finds himself applying for jobs that only require 5 years of experience.
The salaries I'm going after are probably 60% of what I made back in 2003 and 4. You know, it's better than zero money or $560 of unemployment that's soon to run out.
He's interviewing for jobs all over the country and is preparing for the possibility of selling the house he shares with his wife and 10-year-old son.
I have a little hobby now. I'm decided I need to find some money, so I now sold my first items on eBay, so I'm cleaning out the basement and selling things.
What Fuhr and the others seem to understand intuitively is that the longer they're out of the workforce, the harder it will be to get back in. Gary Burtless is a labor economist at the Brookings Institution.
And the question that a lot of employers ask themselves when they look at these applications is, why has this person been unemployed so long?
But with 6 million people in the same situation, he figures some employers might be a little more understanding.
Maybe the stigmatizing effects of being unemployed so long will diminish because more of us will know, there but for the grace of God go I.
What's that gap in my resume? Oh, that's when I was out of work, along with millions of other Americans. Tamara Keith, NPR News, Washington.